In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Betches Media presents.
If you feel depressed and if you feel anxious and you feel confused, you know what? Welcome to the club.
Gazpacho, please.
Oh, my God.
What a stupid son of a bitch.
He believes that it's a woman's right, it's a woman's body, and it's her choice.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
Sayonara, sucker.
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Millie Tamirez.
I'm Caitlin Bird.
And this is the Betches Sup Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. My friends, it is a dark world out there. It feels dark. But you know what's about to not be dark? These summer nights. You know why?
Why?
This week, the sun will not set in the Northeast before 8 p.m. until August. These are the convoluted things that I derive joy from these days.
It's a pretty big thing. I mean, a lot of people worship the sun, so we gotta appreciate the sun god.
We must. We simply must.
I'm here. Ra's here. We're absorbing the beams of sunlight.
Are you in a windowless room?
Yeah. As soon as we started talking about the sun, I was like,
I'm in my open concept foyer.
Oh, nice. Okay, flex on me then.
If I had turned off this light, the sunlight would show up and illuminate me. But
and now we have it until 8 p.m. In other news, I was curious to hear from you this morning, from both of you. What would somebody have to write in pastel chalk in front of your house for you to call the police? Because for Susan Collins, it's not much. So it really got me thinking.
The Civil War is irrelevant. These motherfuckers.
If somebody really wanted to fuck with you, Caitlin, that's what they would write.
That's exactly. A random, like, deep cut. Like, there's like probably 20 wars that's happened since the Civil War. I think for me to call the police, I guess I'm gonna ear with Susan Collins and say, like, it wouldn't take much. It would just, if someone wrote Paramore Sucks. On
that's a hate crime.
That's a hate crime. And I would call the police.
That was incredible. Did you see the performance of Hayley Williams and Billie Eilish doing Misery Business at Coachella? It's like the only thing Coachella was good for. It was quite good.
Really? Because Billie Eilish don't got the energy, but I'll see. I'll give it a chance.
It was mostly Hayley, and she never performs that song anymore because, like, she thinks it's a little bit slut shamey. But then I was listening to the performance, and I was like, this isn't that bad.
It is slut shamey, but also I'm like, she's probably tired of singing the fucking song.
I know.
And
yeah, exactly.
She's probably fun. And now finally, cancel culture's on her side, and she's like, finally, I can stop singing this song. But Billie Eilish is like, you know, if Lunesta was a white woman, that's what I'm saying, but that's my opinion. Okay, I feel like I've alienated the other host, so let's move on.
Amazing. That's the greatest drag I've heard today. That's off of Twitter.
Just off of, I mean, you got to come here for them now. It is always amazing to me. I enjoy Billie Eilish, but I think it's either impressive or maybe just like a weird flex that she will do like a 2.5 hour concert and it's just her jumping around. And some people, it works for them. And some people, you know, I need like a Beyonce marching band, 5,000 people, the hardest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I can accept that from Mitski, but Billy, I don't know.
It was generous for you to specify that it would be that it's Lunesta as a white woman, as if Lunesta wouldn't just obviously be a white woman.
There's a lot of people who say that certain rappers are Lunesta. Like some people say some J. Cole songs or some big, you know, whatever. That it's just a little sleepy. It's a little sleepy music. So, that's what I would say. But, you know, whatever. Beautiful
girls. And on that note, this episode of the Betches Sup Podcast is sponsored by Lunesta. That would be a very on-brand sponsor.
Yeah, Lunesta, what's up?
I can't fucking sleep.
No, I'm sure the FDA, like, they, medications can't sponsor podcasts.
Maybe. I mean, Plan B did, was a Betches sponsor for a minute. We made some. Remember when Chris, one of our staff members who used to work here, Chris Burns, had to make an entire outfit, like a costume that was Plan B. He quit a couple weeks later. I don't know.
someone who probably has never used Plan B ever.
As a gay man. Never. By the way, don't stockpile Plan B. We are actually going to post something on SUP. Later, maybe before the protest, just on, like, we talked about this maybe a little bit last week, just like things that are actually not helpful to do when it comes to abortion advocacy. And like, there are some things that, like, I only recently learned. Like, I don't really, I've never loved the wire hanger imagery, but I did not know how problematic it can be in this moment. And like, to be more specific, people are going to be doing self-managed abortions and they are not using wire hangers. They will very likely be able to get the medication abortion. So like, the wire hangers just kind of can kind of like affirm the talking points of the anti-abortion rights people who say this is very like dangerous for women. So we're going to put that on there tomorrow. But back to Susan Collins. Susan Collins, if you did not hear, reportedly called the police after peaceful protesters illustrated their support for abortion access and pastel chalk on the sidewalk outside of her home. I just feel like the fact I had to include that it was pastel because it was just a really gentle message. It just said, Mainers want the Women's Health Protection Act. Vote yes. Clean up your mess. Collins is expected to advance a more narrow version of that bill in today's vote. I mean, we'll update you on what happens in that tomorrow, but I think we know where it's going to go, barring some huge surprise. A spokesperson for Collins said that they didn't think the message was overtly threatening, but that they'd been advised to notify law enforcement, quote, when there is activity directed at her around her home. It seems pretty broad. I mean, my question is, what's the protocol for when activity is directed towards my uterus? Do I just call the police?
I mean, some people swear.
Susie.
A cab.
Sorry, bitch. ACAB, but also, yeah, it's like, you know, if you can't stand the heat, you can't have it both ways, honey. How many times do we bring this up on the Betches Up podcast, Amanda? Mm-hmm. You can't do whatever you want and not see consequences. You can't take away people's rights and then want to be in your house chilling, watching American Pie and eating popcorn. That's just not going to happen. That's not reality. What is that? There was a TikTok.
That's her self-care watch.
Yeah, life's not fair. A fair is a carnival with rides and hot dogs. This ain't a fair.
Oh, and it's also, I mean, there was apparently something written outside of Brett Kavanaugh's house that was in a confrontational protest style. It didn't bother me. But literally, it was like, Susan, it's going to rain and then the chalk will be gone. Like, it's really not. It's really wild. And just.
She could have just gotten a hose.
She could have gotten a hose, honey.
She could have just gotten a hose and just hosed down her sidewalk and just not cared.
I don't know. A hose and protesters. I'm eerie, guys.
I mean, I guess I.
I'm kidding.
Too soon.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
We're going to unpack a few Trump-related headlines today, but before that, I really encourage you to listen to yesterday's episode of the podcast. If you did not, it's definitely a different episode. It's a really personal interview with Elise about everything that's going on, her personal connection to it. Please check it out. It's very generous of her to have shared in that much detail, especially. It's just we heard from so many of you. So I heard from so many of you. I'm sure she did as well. And she appreciates it. She just, you know, you'll hear it. It's just a perspective that you don't get to hear very often of a certain life stage and a certain set of circumstances and a certain set of emotions. And it was just honestly more powerful than anything I've heard any elected Democrat say. So maybe I encourage them to listen to it too. Please check it out. And there are no ads on it. So that also means you got to listen to all of our shows this week to tell the ads you're listening, because it would not have been appropriate to have ads on that one. But check it out. It'll stay up. And we were so grateful to Elise. If you enjoyed it and it meant something to you, definitely let her know. She appreciates hearing it. On to Donald Trump. Jesus.
Oh, you heard it here. Amanda says Donald Trump is Jesus.
Everybody knows that I say this. I've always said this. I've always said it. So we're going to talk about his like lasting impact, not just on the Republican Party, but I guess on like how we all have to experience the world in general. I think the one we're probably most eager to discuss, we'll discuss some primaries and how they're connected to Trump. Primary season is really, you know, in full swing. But I think what we're most eager to discuss is the news that Elon Musk, who will likely maybe become Twitter's new owner, has said that banning Trump from the platform was a mistake and he would reinstate him. Ugh. Elon Musk called the permanent ban, quote, morally wrong and flat out stupid. Nobody is the authority on morals, but, you know, definitely not this guy. A lot of people disagree with this, but some people agree, including apparently former Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey, who was confusing me yesterday. Reporters were tweeting at him for his opinion on the issue. This is generally how, you know, he engages with the media. And he said that banning Trump was, he called it a business decision. I took that to mean it was a decision they made for the bottom line. But he later clarified that he just meant that because he said businesses should not be making that decision. So I think it's weird why he's like, it was the wrong decision, but also we shouldn't be making these decisions. But he said more broadly that he agrees with Elon Musk that nobody should be permanently banned from Twitter. He called permanent bans a failure of theirs that don't work. Caitlin is reacting to these with gestures that just so perfectly, with such enthusiasm. I wish everybody could see. We could really monetize on YouTube with these. So he called permanent bans a failure of theirs that don't work. Dorsey seems to have changed his mind on permanently banning Trump after the insurrection over time. Again, I'm confused what Jack Dorsey thinks about his own decisions, but he called it a regrettable decision last year, but one they felt was right at the time. Now it sounds like Jack Dorsey no longer believes it was right at the time. Very confusing, but I mean, it's just, I guess what I wanted to talk about with this was like, who gets to say what is morally wrong? And why is it more morally wrong to ban somebody from a social media platform than let them be on that platform and potentially cause mass violence?
I mean, the entire construct, the entire space is just so insanely, it's just like asking the wrong questions, which is like, what is the point of your platform? And not just what makes it profitable, but what is going to be there for the long-term health of this platform? If you say, like, is there a line? Is there, say, like, okay, we've used a time machine and it can only bring people from the past forward and we've brought Adolf Hitler back. Would you let him be on Twitter? Like, what? Think about all the consequences of this. Stop focusing on, oh, you know, like, I personally feel, you know, like, because there's a certain amount of people just viewing their own role in this moment as like a personal, in these very small, petty ways. And, you know, Jack Dorsey has developed a tool that we're going to be talking about and has changed society, that has been used for revolutions, has been used for mass disinformation, that has polluted and uplifted people. And we have to ask, like, okay, if you understand that this is the impact of your business and it's worth maintaining, then why are you, like, what are you going to do to inhibit the worst elements on it? Do you think that you have any obligation to, you know? At what point do you become responsible for what people do with the tool you've created?
Jack Dorsey took a break from doing ayahuasca for 10 minutes, logged into Twitter, and they asked him a whole bunch of stuff. And the reality of, and he said that, I think that you're asking the richest white men, like arguably the most powerful men in society, most powerful people, when we talk about oppression hierarchies and all that shit, these are undoubtedly the most powerful people in society. And you're asking them what their morals are. Like, that is not fucking fair and balanced and all that stuff. They're used to, again, being the center of the universe and being the center of, like, what is right and wrong, but that's just not reality anymore. And so I take what they say as a grain of salt, and maybe morally they feel like, oh, everyone's entitled, you know, First Amendment and all that shit. But Twitter is a business and they have rules. And if you break the rules, you get kicked off. There are consequences for your actions. This is something that a lot of people don't understand, especially when you get richer and older and, you know, you're a white male. You probably don't understand that maybe when you do something, when you break the rules, when you get a lot of warnings, sometimes you can't take that back. There are people, there are black people in jail for selling $20 of weed. For the rest of their life, they're in jail. There are women who can't get abortions now because they made one mistake or whatever consequence, right? It's fucked up. How can everyone live with the consequences of their actions? And Donald Trump can't. He incited an insurrection. He was responsible for it. Everyone, like, no one's arguing that. People that day, and I feel like Jack is, not only is he more far removed from the real world now that he has all this money and is fucking off on whatever island he is, which I don't blame him.
Eating two meals a week.
Yeah, eating two meals a week and fucking whatever. I don't know. I don't blame him either. I would probably do the same, but I think that the reason why his opinion has changed is because probably he was more connected, and like he felt the fear. And then now that media is doing the both sides shit about the insurrection, Donald Trump didn't get like impeached, all this stuff, he's like, it really wasn't that bad. But immediately during the insurrection, it did feel bad. And it's like, let's keep that same energy, but he can't, you know what I mean? And it's not even a reflection that he can't. So I don't know. I really don't care about what mm-hmm. either of these people say.
Yeah, that was so perfectly put. And like the insurrection, the parts of it that went down were very bad. And it's very possible, if not likely, that having him suspended could have prevented further immediate carnage when those emotions were high. So it's very interesting. It's like, oh, it didn't seem that necessary because nothing else happened, without even considering that maybe nothing else happened because he was not given, you know, this megaphone during such an intense moment. And I think when these guys, like, yeah, like this whole freedom of speech thing that has become the new like white male contrarian thing du jour, we as women, like, and I love free speech. In a perfect world, we could have very pure freedom of speech in every arena. But unfortunately, there is abuse and there, like, are marginalized communities. And like these guys are not vulnerable to what happens when you just let unfettered what they call freedom of speech with no guardrails, with nothing to protect people. So it just, when they say it's just morally wrong, yeah, because they have no concept of what happens when you remove those guardrails. For them, it's still bliss.
Yeah, and it's also just an incredibly juvenile, it's kind of like, you know, talking to a 15-year-old, but in the body of these grown-ass men. Uh-huh, yeah. Because you're there and you're like, okay, but you should have learned better by now that, like, you know, just because you have the opportunity to say something does not mean that you are free from the consequences of said said speech. We all know this is one of the most fundamental things that you learn. You can, I mean, I don't know, maybe they had never learned it. Maybe that's the problem. We're raising too many people who've never experienced this. But like, one of the first things I learned is like, you can say certain things to your mom, but you shouldn't.
Uh-huh, right.
Because they're going to be consequences. You know, like, it just was very obvious to me from very young, as a person who loves words. I loved words from the first moment I knew what words were. I mean, I didn't even know what words were. And I loved making sounds that seemed like words. My parents are obsessed with telling me this.
What was your first word? I have to know.
My parents insist that I did not have a first word. I had a first paragraph.
And I can see it. You just came out of the war. You just instantly started speaking like full quotes from.
I did start speaking full quotes.
Naturally.
We started with the Gettysburg Address. Of course. No, I'm kidding. I have a brand.
Imprinted.
You know? No, but the point is that, like, it's kind of wild to me that we've known throughout, like, there's a long legacy, a long discussion about what it means to have a functional open space. And like, yeah, there's public, but there are also terms of service, right? Mm. Like, you guys set up rules on your own platform. that say that there are limits, just like Millie said. And it's like, if you don't believe in those, then you are functionally saying, like, we will let people do anything to each other. And that's just irrational, because the very same thing that they're upset about, oh, they're suppressing speech, is the thing that's like, no, what you're getting is pushback. What you're getting is consequences. What you're getting is people saying that they don't want to hear this thing anymore, mm-hmm. and trying to make that possible.
With the amount of money that Elon is willing to pay for Twitter, like, there are right-wing social media platforms. There are plenty of platforms. Donald Trump is all up on Facebook. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There are a ton of things. It's just like, it's this idea that he has to be on Twitter. Like, he has to be here. And it's like, other people, marginalized people, women, queer people, they've made their own communities other places. Like, that's just a normal part of being marginalized in this country, is that some spaces aren't safe for you and you have to go create your own space somewhere else. But with these people, it's like this entitlement to being in this space where they don't fucking want them, you know? So it's just crazy. I don't know.
I'm laughing at myself because as we're having this conversation about white male privilege, I am about to quote George Saunders via Chris Hayes.
Okay.
But on Jon Favreau's podcast, but they were referencing, I think they were talking about this, and they were just saying, like, if somebody has a megaphone and is talking, even if they're saying the dumbest shit in the room, like, everybody's paying attention. It just sucks up all of the energy. So, like, I do worry that he is everywhere. Trump is everywhere. We're about to talk about that. And Trump says that he's going to stick to Truth Social. But we just know, I do not trust the broader media to have learned a goddamn thing from the past. Oh, my God. What is it since 2016? Now almost 8 years, about how to, like, properly cover him and how to cover what's coming out of the megaphone without. You know, giving him more and more of a future and more of a ramp ahead of him.
The media hasn't even properly covered abortion. No. Like,
it's all over. About, they're not even talking about. Ugh.
Yeah, it's all about fucking protesters on people's lawns and not about all the women that are about to suffer.
The
in Senate
this country. Is not going to pass this today, but yesterday or whatever, they passed a bill to protect Supreme Court Justice's house. And Christine Blasey Ford has had to move 4 times.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's the shit that's like, they haven't learned any lessons. So
I'm going to need the Democratic Party to make some changes. Just going to say that.
You know, and this is like a bigger issue, and I don't know if it's next, and I don't know if I'm
like,
throwing
you don't
off,
say.
I don't know if I'm throwing off the fucking podcast.
No, please. No such thing.
What is the strategy now? What are they doing?
Millie, I do not know. And you know I try to be gracious, and you know I try to be charitable towards them. And I am like, I have never been more like Nancy Pelosi. I love her. But we got this 80-year-old woman who has not been at risk at pregnancy for decades. Just like, I need more energy from them. I need more charisma from all of them. I don't need Joe Biden, Jen Psaki saying for Joe Biden, like, don't be too aggressive in your protests. It's like, do you know the pain that people are feeling right now? Do you know what's about to happen?
It's not even just that. It's just this entire sense that the Democratic Party, you know, there's this obsession that they have with, like, we need two parties. But it's like, well, neither party at this point is functioning.
I don't want to vote for this one.
Kind of purpose. You know, Democrats exist to not be Republicans, and Republicans exist to be fascists. Yep. So there's literally nothing happening anymore. The Democrats are like, well, we don't want to end the Republican Party. And it's like, well, Republicans want to end you. You know, like, elected Democrats are not saying, like, actually, they when they say, like, oh, you know, they're just, it's just like a fundraising line. It's insane to me. It's like, you can't expect me to take this seriously when you turn around and you're like, let's negotiate infrastructure. Like, I don't believe you when you say they're an existential threat. If someone is coming into my house and threatening my family, and, you know, I don't say, oh, well, let's see if we can negotiate with them. Mm-hmm. I say, take that motherfucker out, because that is what happens when you're in a moment and you are facing a serious threat. When someone's saying, I'm going to destroy everything that you are, I'm going to destroy everything that you have, you don't say, okay, well, let's see where we can meet in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, Caitlin, they can't even fucking negotiate infrastructure. As the urbanist and like the public transportation whore on this podcast, they cut everything to make concessions for these people who don't give a fuck about anything.
Nothing.
Yeah, like, the worst thing about that bill was just how it doesn't set up at all for the future. It is entirely a past-looking bill. It's entirely retroactive. It's entirely thinking about cars, which we should be getting rid of.
We like, should I, be getting
and what did we do it for? Republicans who
not building more car friendly infrastructure.
Insane. No, insane. Sorry. And that's all the stuff that got cut mainly, right?
Yeah, everything that looks forward to the is just such a
why do these people love traffic? Why does everybody love traffic?
And building out bigger highways. And it's like, if you're building out more highways, dog, the shit don't work. You build a fucking bus. Build a, you know what I mean? And it's just like,
Bob Moses found this out years ago when he started cutting up New York and putting freeways everywhere, which is that if you build a freeway, they will come. Yeah. And that's the problem, is that it just increases traffic. And the Cross Bronx Expressway continues to be one of the most devastating pieces of urban infrastructure ever. And then we're just building more of
the most devastating pieces of urban infrastructure ever. I love it. I love it.
But I will say reaction. Everyone says that leftism and like defund the police and shit is ruining the Democratic Party.
Moderate Democrats are ruining the Democratic Party.
Reactionary centrism. Mm-hmm. I would say moderate Democrats, like, they don't fucking have anything.
I was talking to a young person yesterday who was like astounded to hear themselves say this and wouldn't pursue this, but they were like, I don't want to vote. Like, I don't know how else to protest the Democratic Party other than not voting for them. But they hold us hostage because they are not Republicans. So, I mean, even like Nancy, there's an anti-abortion Democrat represented in the House of Representatives from Texas. And we talked about him last week and how Jessica, it's Cisneros, right? Is running against him. And hopefully she has a great chance now. This is I saw Nancy Pelosi endorsed him. And like a lot of the establishment people have. And I was like, oh, maybe it's like not a safe seat. Apparently it is. It's a safe blue seat. And they are not taking, I at least need that, guys, right? Like, at least show me that you're furious. Like,
yeah, or don't endorse anybody. If you want
to retract your endorsement and come out strongly and say circumstances have changed, we can no longer be behind this guy. Sorry.
I think about it a lot with like a lot of the insurgents. In some ways, yes, it's better for the insurgency to actually be up against the establishment and be these underdogs that show that they are not going to stay in trend. You know, it's good that AOC had to beat a member of the house seniority. It's like, these are good things because it mobilizes us to actually think about what it is that we want out of our elected officials in ways. And I think we should obviously emphasize Jessica Cisneros, who's running, I think, Texas 28 against Henry Cuellar. It's just we have to do these things that emphasize that we need to change, not just on the ground, but like structurally, ideologically, towards solutions. Because Democrats are very obsessed with like the solution is peace, and it's like, well,
it's like retired.
Are we going to bring that MLK piece, the presence of justice? Are we just talking about the absence of noise, which is not the same thing?
And I will say that Republicans do a better job of not alienating their most radical people, right? They don't alienate QAnon. They don't fucking say anything about QAnon, but let some protesters be outside of Alito's house and the Democrats will rush to denounce their most radical and alienate, you know, the leftists. So that's just something that this is disappointing. And as you say that, you know, AOC, like, thank God for her. And, you know, there's more and more people, quote unquote, in the squad and it's getting stronger. But those people are burnt out. Democrats don't listen to them. They don't have a strong coalition. Like, the establishment is not listening or learning lessons or anything. Every time somebody loses, you know, a primary or not even a primary, you know, a Republican versus a Democrat in like a Senate or Congress, they use that as a chance to blame the squad. They're not learning the lessons, like, you know, so it's like, it just sucks because it's like, we don't want to encourage people not to vote. Because like we're saying, there's local seats. There are DAs that aren't going to prosecute these stupid Republican laws that these guys make. But at the same time, it's like, fuck, what can we do to show that we're disappointed?
I think that for the past couple of years, I have kind of like been very tempted and drawn to the idea that, yes, a lot of these people in national government, like they're old, their ideas are kind of outdated. But they like to remind you that they have been there so long, they're in positions of leadership, and you don't want to compromise that, even though, you know, AOC won her race against, and she has been like one of the most prolific people. And I've always wanted to believe so much that, like, if we can keep our big people there in that standing, they will act when it's necessary. And I think I've just finally, like, realized they're functionally retired. Like, they are not evolving anymore politically. They are done. They are as far as they are ever, it seems, going to go on this issue. So you're right. We just have to replace them. Like, the next time that Nancy Pelosi says, don't get behind that radical candidate, I usually am like, oh shit, is she right? Like, are we potentially threatening like our leverage? No, because we've given them a lot. And obviously this is the only party available to us to vote for. And it's up to us who wins primaries. So I guess just being more engaged in the primaries. I wonder if this could be a good opportunity to discuss Pennsylvania's Senate race. I mean, this is kind of a matchup of, I think it'll be, what do you think? Do you think it's going to go red or blue, Caitlin? Right now, it's who's Dr. what do we have right Oz now? This is the race. OK, right now, this is the race that we have Dr. Oz, who is running with a few others. Trump has endorsed Dr. Oz, which Trump did a rally with Dr. Oz like last weekend, I think. And everyone's just showing up to these rallies for Trump. They booed Dr. Oz.
Yeah, because he's Muslim and Republicans don't care about Muslim people. But anyway,
yeah. Some people have been making like connections, which are probably our xenophobic connections to like his Turkish heritage. On the Democratic side, I'm not sure. I don't know too much about these candidates and how they slot into sort of like the center. I mean, I do know Conor Lamb is actually quite a moderate, quite a centrist, is a Democrat who says those things that just feel like a slap in the face sometimes. Mm-hmm. Also, Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman is running. He, at least for me, made the strongest impression, you know, in those weird days between the election and Joe Biden winning, where he was always on TV reassuring us about what was happening in Pennsylvania. And Malcolm Kenyatta, who is a state representative. He has been for a few years. I think he's definitely the most progressive candidate. I think he's polling behind Fetterman and Conor Lamb. Do you think this is an example of like, I don't know if this is a tight enough race to really see if the current enthusiasm behind maybe a different type of Democrat is here. What do you think we're going to see? It's next
it's
week.
It's tough because all of, I was going to say the two white boys are trash in their own way. So, you know, Fetterman has a whole episode apparently where he like pulled a gun on a black person.
I did hear
so
that.
That's an interesting thing. And Conor Lamb is, you know, moderate and completely uninteresting from my perspective. As in, like, there's a lot of status quo.
His name's Connor. I mean, that's coming out fill of in him. The blanks.
Yeah, and it's like, does the Senate really need another status quo Democrat? Not exactly. Really. I wish Malcolm Kenyatta were doing a little bit better. But black queer person in Pennsylvania is like an uphill battle. As James Carville once said, it's Philadelphia in the east, Pittsburgh in the west, and Alabama in between. You know, so famously as a state, it's like very difficult to kind of build from. You know, Joe Biden is technically from Pennsylvania. Grew up there in Scranton before moving to Delaware. You know, so it's a very... You know, it's got that state energy. It's gonna be hard working class white people to get that attention.
Mayor, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I feel like people are gonna fuck with Fetterman.
Dr. Oz. Yeah, I think so.
Because he just seems like the most Republican looking. Even though he's more progressive, well, than
like
Conor
he looks—he looks like he would be dating Mayor of Easttown. Like he has kind of like a rough around the edges. Like there's a certain Pennsylvania is a closed primary, so if you are registered as a Democrat in Pennsylvania, please go. I'm prepared to make a SUP endorsement for Malcolm Kenyatta. Please go vote for him. Yes. Even if you're not registered for a party, though, I think there are some important ballot initiatives. So always like check those out. If you forgot to update your affiliation, like always make sure you can probably still vote for something. But this is like these are the things I hope people realize as they get more engaged on this issue is like, you're probably like, oh, well, I'm always going to vote for a Democrat and a Democrat always wins my state. But you can, your vote can have more power in deciding which Democrat wins that state and exactly. and potentially advances. All right, finally, some primaries that have already happened. Yesterday, we saw two big ones. We saw them in Nebraska and West Virginia. Trump's preferred candidate for governor of Nebraska was this guy named Charles Herbster, I believe, who's been accused of groping. I mean, just precisely on brand, really on the nose. Several misconduct allegations that he's denied. Trump put on a 2-hour rally for Herbster last week, and instead, this guy, Jim, I didn't have time to look up how to pronounce the last name, so he's just Jim, was endorsed by the party establishment, and he prevailed. This was one of many races that is seen as a proxy war, I guess, between Trump-aligned wing of the party and more establishment conservatives. I'm not sure what establishment conservatives mean, but I think from what I've been reading, it means people that believe Joe Biden won the election and people that believe COVID is real. That seems to be what defines a establishment conservative.
But still to these hate black people.
And, exactly. Exactly.
And hate abortion.
Wretched beliefs, terrible beliefs. So Nebraska's current governor endorsed the, quote, establishment candidate, poured millions of his own money into the race, which is just crazy. Basically, the gist here is that Trump's candidate did not win. The candidates that Trump spoke out against won, and this was a little bit of a surprise in a state that went for Trump at 58% of the vote. But West Virginia told a slightly different story. Trump's preferred candidate did win their primary for the House seat to unseat a sitting Republican who voted for the bipartisan infrastructure deal. So there are actually two sitting congressmen running against each other because West Virginia recently lost a House seat due to population losses because, as Millie says, nobody is doing anything to make West Virginia better. Or I'm sure some people are, but not the people they elected are mm-hmm. not doing much to make it better. When they try, they get ousted, and we'll get to that. Governor Jim Justice and Senator Joe Manchin, apparent because he's a Republican, put their weight behind the more moderate candidate. This guy, the moderate guy, is this guy named McKinley. McKinley voted for the bipartisan infrastructure deal, like I said, and he also voted in support of a Senate investigation of January 6th, which ultimately died. And apparently, West Virginia Republicans could not use the infrastructure money to build a bridge to get over that. They basically held that against them, and this guy lost, and they supported the Trump-endorsed candidate. So I don't know. I still was surprised that this guy voted to fix your roads and bridges, but you were so mad at him for not backing, you know, Trump, I guess. Crazy.
So gross. Like, so gross.
Like, what does that signal to, you know, like Joe Manchin? You know, like, of course Joe Manchin's going to behave the way he does in the Senate.
Joe Manchin is a Republican.
Right.
He just, like, is a Republican who continues to be inside the Democratic Party. And the reason for that is you can see.
Yeah, Caitlin, how does Joe Manchin benefit from identifying as a Democrat? Because he gets all of the power. We're always talking
Everything
about him.
Everything caters to him. You notice that because he's a swing vote. If he were to actually become a Republican, he'd be fucked. Like, 10 ways. We can just see
he'd
that.
Be a nobody.
Like, literally, he put his political cage behind defending this guy who he believes did the right thing, as far as Republicans can do any kind of right things. And like, I lost too, because, and this is important, the Republican Party is beyond saving. We all know this, but like,
Joe Biden didn't know it.
But Joe Biden does not know it. You're right.
I wish more people did know it. But like, the fact is that, like, because the party is beyond saving, there's a certain idea that, like, okay, you've got this Trump faction, this non-Trump faction. And it's like, well, it's not really, because they don't believe in voting rights. They still believe in, like, the very same structural things that Trump is trying to emphasize. They just don't like how he does it. They're fine with overturning elections. They just don't like the way he's so loud and gross about it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They don't mind undermining people's ability to vote. They just don't like it being so obvious. You know, these are the things. It's like, none of them disagree, not fundamentally. And when Donald and the fact is that these people don't want nice things. People who are voting for Republicans don't want nice things.
No.
They want power. They want hierarchy. And they want someone to tell them that they are better than those beeps who they can't continue to lord over. And anything can fit into that beep space because it's always going to be a slur because it's about denigrating other people's humanity to lift their own up. They are quintessential bullies. You know, it's like, I can't feel good unless someone's beneath me. And I need my politicians to emphasize that I am the only thing worth protecting and everyone else should be destroyed to make me feel better. I don't mind if everything goes to shit. They just need to get
it. It will anyway. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and like, what kind of future is that? You know, like, what, you know, I think about, you know, what AOC says, and just like, what kind of world are you going to lead in the future? Like, that's just like, if you want to take away people's right to vote and make it so women can't do this and trans, like, what does that look like? What does that world look like? And you still want to be in charge? You don't want to lose or relinquish control or power? Like, what?
It's antisocial behavior.
Yeah,
but it's like, rule in hell and serve in heaven. Some people have that mindset.
Well, and I'll just say this, like, you know, I was talking to my friend Marsha Belsky about this, but it's like so many, I do feel like there are a lot of people who before the Trumpism really like their identity was that they're Republican and like mm-hmm. that was their thing. They're like radical and a maverick, right? Like John McCain and goes against the grid. They know that like whatever, but they want to be contrarian, you know, and they're sticking to it. You know what I mean? No matter what's happening. And like, they're the first people to be like, I hate gay people, but I started talking to you, you know, like, or like, I've never talked to a black bear, but I started, it's like, no, you, like, you have those views, like, everyone else knows that, like, not all gay people or whatever, right. But like, you're so stuck on this identifying marker of being a Republican or like sticking to this, like, contrary to things that you actually believe in. Like, you don't actually totally. Believe that everyone who gets an abortion is murdering babies, or you don't actually, but like, it's this whole contrarian identity that they've just like doubled down on, and like all these social media sites have caused for
exactly,
them to get
that's what I was
even
thinking.
More radicalized too. It's crazy.
Yeah. We'll end there. If you live in Pennsylvania and can vote in the primary, please, please, please go do it so we can get some fucking senators who will do what we need them to do. As we will see later today, we do not have them. We do not have them. That is our show. We'll be back tomorrow. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Millie Tamaras.
I'm Caitlin Bird.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast. Bye.
The Betches Sup podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Jorge Morales Pico, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Be sure to follow at Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@betches.com. Betches.